Let me pray for us. Let me look at this text. God, we do thank you for your word, which is, as you say, a double-edged sword. We ask that it would come and pierce us, living sacrifices that we are, to joint and marrow, divide us up, that we might be placed on the altar of your love, holy and acceptable to you, that we might live lives of sacrificial service to you, that we might be a sweet aroma to you, for Christ's sake. Amen. Well, this is the second week that we have looked at this character, Samson. And last week, I tried to start painting a picture of him. And what does he look like to you? I mean, Samson is a man of tremendous strength and glaring weakness. I mean, glaring weakness. He is motivated by a lust for women. He has a temper. He is selfish, a free spirit, a loner. He does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, without regard to his parents, without regard to God and the claims of God on his life. Samson is a man of glaring weakness, but Samson is also a man of tremendous strength. I mean, when a lion attacks him, he rips it apart like we would rip apart a young goat. Not really, but that's what the text says. He is a man who at one time, in one scene, takes down 30 Philistines at once. At another time, he takes down 1,000 Philistines with the jaw of an ox. And in one scene, it says that actually he rips apart ropes like fire burns tissue paper. Samson is a man of tremendous strength. He's a man of glaring weaknesses. I mean, what is your picture of Samson? Perhaps you think he's 6'6", dark hair, a chest and abs chiseled out of granite, grapefruits for biceps, thighs the size of tree trunks. Is this what Samson looks like? I would suggest to you, actually, he probably looked more like me. And you know why I say that? It's actually because, look, the Philistines asked this question in chapter 16, verse 5. They want to know where his great strength lies. Now, why do you ask the question? Because it's not obvious. It's not obvious to Samson. And then I would suggest to you, it's not obvious to the Philistines. And I would suggest to you, it's probably not so obvious to us either. See, Samson, he is a paradox. He's a man of tremendous strength and tremendous weakness, and he's more complex than we think. So we think we have a lion on him, but I'm not sure we do. And notice that their question and our question are different. We want to know, how is this man so weak? What is the source of his weakness? And they want to know, what is the source of his strength? But both questions are important. Because when we get down to the heart of both questions, when we get into both questions, we start to understand more about this man and all his paradoxes, his virtue and his vileness. And we start to understand more about our own paradoxes, because as I read the story, I think that, there's a little Samson in all of us, and there's certainly too much Samson in me. So let's look at Samson's weaknesses, and then let's look at his strength. His weaknesses. The chapter begins in verses 1 through 4, saying that Samson goes down to Gaza. Now, you need to know two things. By this time in Samson's life, he is actually the ruler of Israel. He has been reigning and judging for 20 years. The other thing that you need to know is that Gaza is in the heart of Philistine territory. So here you have Samson, the leader of Israel, walking down right into the heart of Philistine territory. I mean, you know, that is pretty dangerous. You're not going to do that unless you have a good reason, right? Well, let's see what Samson's reason is. Chapter 16, verse 1. Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. Well, the author doesn't mince words, does he? Samson goes down to Gaza out of lust for a woman. The Philistines then surround him to ambush him. He waits them out and they end up leaving, probably hungry, want to get some food. He has a temper tantrum and storms off with the city gate. That's verses 1-3. And we ask, why is that there? I mean, Hebrews, they weren't long on words. They didn't waste words. They weren't like preachers. They weren't like me. They got to the point. So why do we have this here? Well, I think the reason we have it is because the end of chapter 15, verse 20, tells us that Samson had judged Israel for 20 years. And this gives us a picture of what those 20 years were like. This is what he was doing as a leader of Israel. What does he do? He endangers his life and the future of his people because of a lust for women, because of sex. Now you think to yourself, that is crazy. I mean, why would anyone do that? Why would you endanger your life and the future of your people over a lust for women, over a woman? It sounds crazy. It is crazy, but people do it every day. Every single day. Millions of people did it yesterday. That's what someone does anytime they entertain an affair. They put their lives in danger and they put their future of their people, their family in danger over sexual addiction. It's what a person does when they open up the internet browser to go to pornography. They endanger their own lives and themselves. They are playing with fire and the future of their family, whether they know it or have one or not, because of an addiction, a sexual addiction. I mean, you know how many lives have been ruined? How many careers have been ruined? How many families have been ruined? How many marriages are cold because of this issue? It happens every day. It happened to Samson. Now, this might be a little too close to home for some of us, and I'm sure it is for most of us, because the problem is so rampant. Now, some of you look at Samson and you say, but for the grace of God, there I go I. But for the grace of God. And some of you look at Samson and you say, that's the path I'm on. Let me just say this. There is mercy and healing and hope and cleansing in Jesus Christ. Run to him. Run to him. He can help you. He can heal you. It's not easy and it's not quick, but he will. Because the very fact that the sign in the old covenant was circumcision, that most vulnerable place, the place of our naked shame, says that that's where I want to heal you, Abraham. That's where I want to heal you, my people. I will cover you and I will cleanse you in all your naked shame. That's what the gospel says. Run to him. Samson needs to run, but he does not run. No, he endangers his life and the future of his people because of sex. And this isn't the first time that this has happened. Remember, last week we saw Samson in the beginning of chapter 15. Beginning of chapter 14, he sees a woman of the Philistines who was right in his eyes, and then he goes to marry her. At the wedding party, he has this bet with some other Philistine men, and what happens? He tells his fiance his secret, and he endangers his life, and eventually ends up losing hers. This isn't the first time this has happened to Samson, and this won't be the last time it happens to Samson either, which brings us to Delilah. We're introduced to Delilah in verse 4. After this, the text says, he, that is Samson, loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. Her name actually means night. Incidentally, Samson's name means sun. She was the darkness that would put out his light. And the Philistines come to her, since he is public enemy number one, and they make a proposition to her, verse 5. Seduce him and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Now, clearly, Delilah was motivated by money. This would have been millions of dollars in today's economy. Millions of dollars. But it's more than just that. I mean, she would have been a national heroine. Remember, Samson is public enemy number one. And so she takes the bait. Which brings us to this famous story. And I must admit, the story is kind of farcical. It's almost hard to believe what happens. I mean, look at her approach, verse 6. Let me put it in my words. It's like she comes up to Samson and she says, Samson, honey, dear, hypothetically speaking, if someone were to want to bind you and subdue you, you know, to take you down, how would they do? Just hypothetically speaking, how would they do that? Right? Oh, honey, dear, I just want to know. And he says, oh, here's what they do. They would take fresh bowstrings, verse 7, and they would tie me up. And then I'd be as weak as any other man. And so she does that. She takes fresh bowstrings. She ties them up. The Philistines hide out in the room. And then all of a sudden she says, Samson, the Philistines are upon you, verse 9. And what happens? He rips through the fresh bowstrings and he gets free. Now, what do we expect to happen at this point? What is any rational person going to do? What do we expect? We expect Samson to get out of there, get away from that woman. What are you doing? Or at least get like really upset with her. But rather than him getting upset with her, she gets upset with him. Verse 10, you have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you might be bound. Okay, in today's psychological terms, that's called borderline personality disorder. Oh, honey, dearest, I love you so much. You have mocked me and told me lies. And so he says, okay, yeah. Did I say fresh bowstrings? What I meant, verse 11, is new ropes. So she takes new ropes. She binds them up. And then we replay the story. The Philistines hide out. They come in. Samson, the Philistines are upon you. And he breaks through the new ropes and conquers them. And Samson, why did you mock me and tell me these lies? Did I say new ropes? I meant if you would weave my 7 locks of hair, verse 13. So she weaves his hair. We're getting a little too close to home, aren't we, when we start talking about hair. So she weaves his hair. Samson, the Philistines are upon you. They hide out. They come in. And the same thing over. And we're thinking, like, doesn't he get it? I mean, how could he be such an idiot? Well, as the Rolling Stones said in their song about him, he was blinded by love. He was blinded by love. And you know what? That's what sin does. It blinds us. It blinds us and it causes us to live in denial about the true state of things. It does it all the time. You see, sin is temporary insanity. Sin is not good for us or anyone, and whenever we act on it, we are actually bringing destruction into our own lives and destruction into other people's lives, and yet we do it anyway. Instead, we live in it for states at a time when we know it's not good for anyone, but we do it. Why do we do it? Because sin is temporary insanity, and that's why we need one another. That's what membership vows are. That's why we take them. What a membership vow is, one of the best ways to think about it is this. When you become a member of this community and someone stands up here and they take vows, what they are doing is in a moment of sanity, they are saying, should I ever go insane, I give you permission to come in. And we all know that we are prone to go insane. You see, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. We sing it, but do we mean it? And so we take membership vows so that someone can step into our lives. Let me ask you a question. Do you have anyone to step into your life? Should you go insane? should you be living in rebellion and sin? Have you given anyone permission to step in? Because Samson, he hasn't. He's a loner. Unlike the other judges who we see are always recruiting people to work with them, Samson, not once does he recruit someone to work with him. He is a loner. He is on his own. And oftentimes that's how we think we can do the Christian life, but we cannot. We cannot. Well, she asked him once. She asked him twice. She asked him three times, and this time he breaks. Verse 17, he says, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me." Now, to understand this and what's going on here, you have to understand what Samson means when he says he is a Nazarite. The Nazarite vow, the background to it, is in Numbers chapter 6. And a Nazarite was someone who took a vow to God. And the vow was that they would set themselves apart for a very specific purpose, for a very specific service unto God. And in doing so, they would vow to abstain from three things: carcasses, no touching dead bodies of any sort. They would abstain from wine. And they would also abstain from cutting their hair, scissors. And so these three things they would do. Now, none of these are wrong. It's fine to cut your hair, please. It is fine to touch a dead body. I mean, you know, we're okay with butchers. And there's nothing wrong with wine. The Lord delights to give wine to make the heart merry, the psalmist says. So the problem is not with any of these things. The issue is that I am taking this vow to set myself apart for a specific purpose. And Samson, he was had taken this vow, this Nazarite vow, to set himself apart for God's service. Now think of where we've been in the story. What happens in verse 14? A lion comes upon him. He rips it in two. And then there happens to be miraculously honey in it the next day because bees had swarmed there. And what does he do? He reaches in, he takes the honey, and he eats it. And then a little later on in chapter 15, he takes a fresh, it says fresh, jawbone to defend himself with the from the Philistines. You know what that is? Strike one. And think about this. Where was Samson going when he came across this lion? Well, he's going to pre-wedding festivities. He's going to pre-wedding festivities, a party or a feast, but the word the text uses to talk about a feast or in chapter 13, verse 12, is clearly a drinking party. You see, this was not unlike bachelor parties today, a seven-day binger. Strike two. See, Samson, he has despised his vow in every way possible except cutting his hair. Except cutting his hair. Well, we pick up the story in verse 18. When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up again, for he has told me all his heart." And then they hide out. And then the text, it's actually very detailed. It says that he falls asleep on her lap. Now, that is intimate. He falls asleep on her lap, and then the text is ambiguous. It says that she calls out, but who is she calling out to? Well, I think she's calling out to Samson. "Hey, Samson, Samson, are you up?" No. He's asleep. And then what does she do? She takes the razor. It's in the feminine. And she cuts his hair. She shaves it off. She takes the razor, she cuts its hair, she shaves it off, and then she calls out to the Philistines. They come in. Samson says, she says to Samson, "Samson, get up. The Philistines are upon you." And he got up like before. But it wasn't like before. Verse 19 says very simply, very tragically, that his strength left him. So verse 21, the Philistines seized him, they gouged out his eyes, and they brought him down to Gaza. We've heard of that place before. And bound him with bronze shackles. Now here's the question. Why did he tell Delilah? I mean, why didn't he lie again? He's already lied two times. Why didn't he lie a third time? Why does he tell her? Well, I think one reason is because he loved her. Well, at least he was infatuated with her. Samson told her because he was infatuated with her. Verse chapter 16, verse 4 tells us that Samson loved her, but it's more like infatuation. Notice that Delilah, she responds the same way both of the previous times when she finds out that she's been lied to. Verses 10 and verse 13, she says, "You mocked me and told me lies," but before this last time, she changes her tune. Did you notice what she says? Look, verses 15 and 16, she says to him, "How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times, and you have not told me where your great strength lies." It says that when she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. Oh, Samson. How can you say you love me if your heart is not with me? This isn't a not-so-veiled threat. She's saying, you don't love me or you would confide in me and tell me the truth. And since you don't love me, I'm gone. So either tell me the truth or I'm leaving. Well, Samson, he just couldn't take that. Luke verses 17 and 18 says that he told her his heart. Twice, he told her his heart. See, he had given Delilah his heart. There was something about Delilah that he needed. He felt like he needed. She gave him something that he didn't feel like he could get anywhere else. And so keeping Delilah, it was more important than keeping his vow. Keeping Delilah was more important than anything. He would rather die than lose Delilah and what she was able to give him. That's why it says, verse 16, his soul was vexed to death. He would rather die than lose her. You know, earlier we talked about the fact that people, that they endanger themselves all the time. They'll forfeit their lives, their careers, their families because of a sexual addiction. But the question is why? Why do people do that? Or why did Samson do it? Well, they don't do it for sex, you see, because sex is never just about sex. And pornography is never just about pornography. He had given her his heart. There was something deeper going on, something that he felt that he could get from her, that he couldn't get anywhere else. What was it? Intimacy? Value? Affirmation? Approval? Being wanted? Feeling connected to someone, however false? I don't know. But it vexed his soul to death. What about you? What are you looking for? What vexes your soul to death? What do you say, if I didn't have that or if I lost that, I don't know if I could go on living. I don't know that I would feel worthy or valued. What do you say, I could not get that anywhere else? Whatever that is that it gives you. So you know what we call that? We call that an idol. It's to look at anyone or anything to be and do for you what only God can be and do for you. And you see, Delilah, she was what she gave Samson. That was his idol. Samson, he tells her because she's his idol. He tells her because she's infatuated with her. At least that's one reason. But I think there's a second reason. The second reason is this. I think that Samson tells her because he didn't understand grace. Now, this might not be immediately apparent, but notice that in verse 20, after she says, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson," notice how he responds, "I will go out as at other times and shake myself free." Now, that's odd. I will go out as at other times, as at other times. And that's the operative word, as at other times. I mean, I've always gotten out of this before. Why not get out of it now? But here's the question. I mean, didn't he know that his hair had been shaved? He's been growing out his hair for 40 years. My brother grew dreadlocks for 6 years. They got so heavy. He's not a big guy, but they got so heavy that he started having back problems. Back problems from dreadlocks. And so eventually, actually, the back problems got so bad that he had to cut his hair. Now, my brother, when he woke up the next morning, do you think he noticed? Do you think he felt different? Do you think he expected to look into the mirror? Do you think it took a mirror for him to realize that his dreadlocks were gone? Well, let me ask you, have you ever had a big haircut? How do you get up the next morning? I swear, I fly out of bed. If I could have that happen every day, I would be so much more productive, right? The day after a big haircut, I'm like, whoo, everything's so much lighter. I don't know what it is. I mean, surely he knew. The hair was all over the floor. He knew. He just didn't think it mattered. I will go out as at other times. You see, my strength has never left me before. And no matter how much I've broken God's law or lived in rebellion against God, he's always given me strength. The strength has always been there. It's my inalienable right, and therefore I will have it this time. But he didn't have it this time. You see, Samson, he either presumed upon God's grace, thinking that it would just be there no matter what, or he was unable to see that he was dependent upon God's grace, that this was a gift and not an inalienable right. But either way, he misunderstood God's grace, because grace, you can't demand it. You can only receive it. And his strength, he had seen it as an inalienable right and not a sovereign gift. Do you presume upon God's grace? In what ways might you presume upon God's grace? Do you view God's grace as a right and not a gift? Well, he's done it before, so he's got to do it in the future. Do you think because God has saved me from this, because he has rescued from me this in the past, therefore, it doesn't matter how I live in the future, I know I'll be okay? Well, then you don't understand the grace of God. You don't understand the grace of God. So, what is the source of Samson's weakness? I think we can answer that now. Do you know what it is? It's his strength. See, it was his success. It was his gifts that caused him to stop being dependent and relying upon God. And it's often that way. It's a theme that we've seen over and over and over and over again in this book. We've seen it. But do we get it? Do I get it? I'm not sure that I do. It was his strengths, it's his gifts that led to his weakness. Well, if that was the source of his weakness, what is the source of Samson's strength? Well, we've already said it's not his physique. That would be the obvious one. So what is it? Well, I think on a surface reading, we must say it's his hair, right? It's after his head was shaved, verse 19, that his strength leaves him. And it's when his hair begins to grow again, verse 22, that he becomes strong again. The scene is set. He is working in a mill, grinding it out. They bring him to the temple of Dagon so that they can, quote, that so that he can, quote, entertain them. That is the Philistines. Eyeless in Gaza by the mill he stood, John Milton wrote in his poem. And they bring Samson out, and he set him between two pillars, but his hair had grown back out. And he pushes the pillars down. And when he pushes the pillars down, the temple falls. And he killed more men in his death, the text says, than he did in his life. He regained his strength, and so perhaps it was his hair. But think about it. His hair, it was about something else. It was about his vow. The fact that he was a Nazirite. You see, the hair was a symbol of something else. The hair was a symbol of his dedication to God. So it's not his hair. His hair is not the power. His hair is not the strength. I mean, he has to have actually a boy lead him over by the hand to the poles. It's not his hair that's his strength. But his hair, it wasn't unimportant, you see. There's this correspondence between his head being shaved and him becoming weak, and his hair growing out and him becoming strong again. You see, there's a relationship between the symbol of his relationship with God and his relationship with God. We have one of those. We have two of those. Do you know what it's called? A sacrament. Baptism in the Lord's Supper. And it was because Samson, because he treated the symbol lightly, that was an indication that he treated the relationship lightly. And in the same way, if we treat the symbols of baptism, where God claims us as his own and cleanses us, and the Lord's Supper, where God continually strengthens and nourishes us, if we treat the symbols lightly, then it's an indication of how we treat the relationship, you see. I mean, the bread, the wine, they don't have power in themselves. But the Holy Spirit has power in your relationship with God, and he uses these things, these symbols, to empower you. So here's the question. Are you just okay with being away from the table? Are you okay if a church says, no, we have to actually unwelcome you from this table because you're living in rebellion and sin? Does that bother you? Because it should. Do you think that just because you had the symbol of baptism put on you, that if you neglect the relationship to which that symbol points, that you'll be okay because you have the symbol? You won't. But if you have the symbol, then do you say and look back to the symbol and say, God has really claimed me. He really loves me. I am his own. We go through a catechism with Neve, and we throw Bible verses in there and also have other questions that we have. And one of the questions that I ask my daughter is, Neve, does God love you? And how do you know? And she pats her head and she says, he baptized me. Yes, he did. Live into that love, daughter. Are you living into that love, or have you rejected it? Have you thought that it doesn't matter? But if the hair is not unimportant, then why did the Philistines let the hair grow out? It's a good question, because it says that his hair grew out and they just let it grow out. Why? Are they stupid? Well, no. They know that actually his hair was a symbol of being a Nazirite and a Nazirite vow, but he broken the vow, and since he's broken the vow, he's no longer a Nazirite, and so his hair doesn't matter anymore. That's what they thought. They thought that because he's broken the vow, then God is not with him. But you see, that just shows how wrong the Philistines' view of God is. You see, the Philistines, they only knew of gods whose love, acceptance, and favor was contingent upon our obedience. Samson's faithfulness to his vow was not his strength. His strength was in God's faithfulness to the vow. See, God had said, you will be a Nazirite from birth until death. And what God had said, God is faithful to. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, Paul writes, for he cannot deny himself. See, I wonder how many of you relate to God that way. I often do. I think that his love and acceptance of my life is contingent upon my obedience. And when I do certain things, I think I have squandered away my future. Some of you have squandered away your lives. And some of you have done things, and I have done things that other people knew about. Some do, some don't. Sometimes they're open, sometimes they're not. We all have skeletons in our closet. But we think to ourselves, I am damaged goods, and I can only expect to achieve a certain amount of service and usefulness in life. You are wrong. That is not the God of the Bible. When we are faithless, he remains faithful to his promise. Samson's most faithful act and his greatest act was in his death. It's not Samson's being faithful to his vow, but God's being faithful to his vow. That is the source of his strength. You see, that's what brings us to the real source of his strength. There's this interesting interchange in chapter 16, verse 20. It says, after that Samson says that he will, go out at other times. Then it has these tragic lines. The narrator is commenting and it says, but he did not know that the Lord had left him. It doesn't say he did not know that his hair had been shaved. He knew that. He did not know that the Lord had left him. You see, where was Samson's strength? His strength came from the Lord. The Lord was the source of Samson's strength. And that's why it's when he comes to this place where he calls upon God in this prayer of dependence in verse 28. Oh, Lord, please remember me and please strengthen me this once. Oh, God, that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. Samson has only prayed twice in his life. And here, finally, he gets to the place where he understands that his strength is absolutely dependent upon God. Do you hear this prayer? Please strengthen me only this once. Please strengthen me. It's not my right. It's a gift. But would you please do it? And notice what he says. Lord, please remember me. You see, Samson knows that he is forgettable. He is no longer the center of the universe. He has been humbled. And it's in this place of humble dependence that he finds his source of strength again. See, here's the paradox. Samson, his weakness was his strength, but his strength, it was found in weakness. And that's how it always is with the Christian life. When I am weak, Paul says, then I am strong. When you are weak, then you are strong. When you are dependent, then you are strong. And where dependence is the objective, weakness, it is an advantage. Because then we lean upon God, who remains faithful even when we are faithless. Well, there was another. He was like Samson in the fact that his greatest act of faithfulness was in his death and not in his life. He was like Samson in the fact that God did not use an army or 300, but he used one. And he went it alone. But he was unlike Samson in the fact that his obedience lasted the whole of his life, and it was an obedience unto death, even death on the cross. And he was faithful completely, and the reason where he derived his strength from was in prayer, as he continually turned to the Lord in prayer. And his last prayer, though, was not, strengthen me this once, that I might avenge the Philistines for my eyes, that I might avenge my enemies. His last prayer was, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Into your hands I commit my spirit. You see, Jesus Christ, he was dependent all the way through. He is a greater judge than Samson. He is the one who delivers us in his death. And with arms stretched out, he rescues us from all our evil. That's what this book is about. Jesus. Let's prepare to come to him now at his table. Amen.